So today's title is Living in the Kingdom, Following Jesus. I'm looking at my fingers, I'm turning the page, nobody shake my hand. Okay. So we're going to look at what does that look like on a personal level for us to live in the kingdom and follow Jesus. And then under that title, really, of what it looks like for us, I'm going to particularly look at our identity and the sacrifice that it involves, and really just doing what Jesus does. Okay? And then I'm going to move on to what does it look like for us as a church? As a church living in the kingdom and following Jesus. How does that really impact us as this church? And as part of that, I'm going to share with you what are the elders' hopes and dreams for this church. So, we start on a personal level. And we're looking at the verses that were read. So verse 3 said, "The sheep recognize the true voice of the true shepherd, for he calls his own by name and leads them out, for they belong to him." So we belong to Jesus. That's the first point there. And then verse 14 says, "I alone am the good shepherd. And I know those whose hearts are mine, for they recognize me and know me. Just as my Father knows my heart, and I know my Father's heart." So the first thing I want to talk about when we look at living in the kingdom and following Jesus is that he gives us an identity. There is identity. Today's culture seems to obsess about identity. What is identity? Well, Tim Keller, who you often hear about from this platform, Tim Keller, he's an American pastor, a theologian and a Christian apologist. And he says that identity is a sense of self and a sense of worth. That it's the core, the durable part of you that identifies you as you in every situation. It is what makes you confident of your value. Now, today's culture says we should look to discover or create our own identity. That no one else should be able to tell you who you are and what your identity is. And in our culture, we're encouraged to look inside ourselves and find ourselves. Now, Tim Keller challenges this. He says you can't find your identity from inside yourself because what you find inside yourself is contradictory. Your feelings, for instance, contradict each other. Your career desires, for instance, may conflict with your love desires. For instance, your career desire may be to be a farmer or a pilot, and these demand that you live in a certain place. But then you love someone who needs to work or wants to live in a place that's not compatible with this. So is your identity in being a pilot or a farmer or being with the person who loves you and meets your needs? So Tim Keller says deciding your identity based on these things is unstable. Things change and you have to choose which are you going to be. And he says you make that choice based on a moral grid that culture has laid on you. So I was thinking about this and I was thinking an example of that might have been in the past if you were a wife. The culture stated that you have to go where the man goes. Okay? The culture led the men to being paid more than the women. And all these things reinforced the choices that you had to make. So we think we're making our own choices about our identity, but we don't realise how much the culture we live in is influencing us. It's easier, like in the changing roles of women, to look back and see it, how culture has influenced us. So, for instance, if your identity is being a mum, when you have a bad day with the kids, it becomes more than that. It's become an attack on your identity. You end up feeling down and condemning yourself. How can you have got it wrong today? You're meant to be this wonderful mum. Or, well, I'm a mum and I'm rubbish at it. If you don't feel good about yourself unless you're in a relationship, the pressure on that relationship is enormous. Because if you don't get on well, this attacks your identity. One of my children was like this. Every time we went for a dog walk together, they'd confide in me what was going on in their life. And there'd always be this person that they were drawn to. And I'd have this inner smile and they'd tell me about this person and how they were wondering whether to speak to them about it and hoping that they wouldn't be rejected. And they were scared of rejection. And I would think, you're not ready. God knows your heart, and he knows that you would get your identity from having that relationship with that person. And I knew that until they were strong in themselves, so that they didn't need someone else to make them feel good about themselves, in his mercy, I believe, God kept them from meeting that someone who felt the same way about them. Because if your identity is based on being a relationship, that's a shaky place to be. Because if anything happens in that relationship, you're going to be in a really shaky place. If your identity, is born out of achieving better than others, it's achieved by feeling better because others aren't as good as you, as insightful as you. And this can lead to a need in you to trash other people or discount their achievements. Oh, well, it's because whatever, in order to make you feel better about your achievements, so that their achievement doesn't reflect badly on who you are. Or you can just feel down and dissatisfied because you haven't achieved what they have. We need recognition. That's why likes on social media become such a popular thing, as it meets a need in us for recognition, for love, for value, for worth. And you need the love and esteem of someone you value. If you don't value them, what they think of you won't be worth much to you. But if you get your esteem from someone, even if it's someone you value, what if they do let you down, are off with you? Or they give you love according to how well you perform? What does that do to your self-esteem, your identity, your mental health? So Jesus is the Good Shepherd. He calls you by name. You know, when I'm at an appointment at the hospital, thankfully, I don't have to do that very often. But they call out Gillian. And I know that they mean me, but I also know they don't really know me. Because nobody ever calls me Gillian, apart from at an appointment. Because everybody knows that it's Jill. There's something special about people using your name. And when it's referred to here, I believe it means more than that. It means he knows your identity. He knows that durable core, that is who you are. He knows all he's placed in you, your heart, your emotions, your ideas, your mind. He knows you. If you know God loves you, that gives you a powerful basis for a stable identity. To know that God loves you isn't based on the current cultural setting or current moral grid. He is unchanging. If you have a bad day, that doesn't impact on his love for you. God told me recently that he doesn't need me to do anything for him. You see, I've been driving along, as you do, and thinking, sometimes I feel, God, as if people only want to meet with me because they need something from me. They want me to do something for them. And that can impact on my feelings of self-worth. But God said to me, I don't need you to do anything for me. I thought, no. He's faithful. He doesn't break his promises. Promise keeper. His love isn't based on your performance, so you don't need to look down on others or compare yourself to others. His love for you is not impacted by others. God says you are adopted, you're a citizen of heaven, you are united to Christ. Full stop, no ifs, no buts. Following Jesus means your identity at the core of you that is durable is that you're a child of God, that he loves you, that he will never reject you. He knows you, the real you, that no one else knows, and he loves you. So, why is it that so many of us still struggle with our identity, our self-esteem, even if we are Christians? Well, Tim Keller says, identity is like a deck of cards. Being a Christian is in the deck. Okay? So I'm a daughter, a mother, a wife, a teacher, an elder, a friend, a Christian. These are all things that make up my identity. But following Jesus, being a Christian, has to be at the top, in your heart, okay? Now, this isn't an attempt by me to say you need to do more for God. No, what I'm talking about is what you believe makes up your identity. It has to be a heart thing. You need to believe that he died for you, that he loves you. Tim Keller says it has to go to your imagination. Now, that really surprised me, because I didn't think Tim Keller was kind of like that. But that's what he said. He said, it has to go to your imagination. Now, I do the Sozo ministry in this church. I always mention it from this platform. I don't seem to be able to preach without mentioning it. But when I Sozo children, to help them to connect with God, I often start with their imagination. And I'll say to them, picture a tree. All children can picture a tree. Okay? And then I say to them, tell me what you see. And they'll say to me, oh, it's tall, and it's got big leaves, and it really stretches wide. And then because they're children, they'll say something like, it's got monkeys in it. I just love it. And they describe it to me. And then I'll say to them, can you picture Jesus? Tell me what you see. And they describe him to me. And then I ask them, where is he in the room? And they tell me. And they come up with things that aren't in the Bible, that they haven't read. And it's so God. Is it their imagination? Yes. It certainly started that way. Is it God? Yes. He uses our imagination to show us things, to communicate with us. Tim Keller says that the belief that Jesus died for you has to reach your imagination. That when you struggle with low self-esteem or identity, we need to pull your Christian identity out of the deck, push it to the top. And as always, through worshipping and through our thinking, we can turn our doubts into a faith encounter with God. So Tim tells a story I like. He says, imagine a young man, the only son of a single young mother. She works her fingers to the bone and provides for him, helps him, enables him to go to college or university. And she says to him, be good. Care for others, work hard, always tell the truth. So he does that. He's good. He cares for others. He works hard. He always tells the truth. But he never contacts her. And Tim Keller says, is that okay? He's doing what she told him to do. He's living the life she wants him to lead. Is that okay? Well, of course it's not. He owes her a relationship. In the same way, Tim Keller points to what God has done for you, and he says to those who say, well, I live a good life, I'm a good person, I live the Christian way, I don't have to go to church to be a Christian, I don't have to pray, I don't need to read my Bible, I don't need to worship. And Tim Keller says, in the same way as the son in that story, that's wrong. You don't relate to God. And saying, but I'm a Christian, he says that's offensive. Just living a good life isn't enough. So following Jesus gives us our identity, but it also calls us to do as he did. This is a really quick point, that's all really. Jesus doesn't just tell us, he loves us, he shows us with action. He dies for us. And that brings me to the next point, sacrifice. Bill Johnson's my other favourite preacher. So he's an American Christian minister and evangelist from the charismatic wing of the evangelical tradition of Protestant Christianity. And I love his preaching. He inspires me. He makes me hunger more for God. He says that if Jesus is who he says he is, I owe him the rest of my life. So following Jesus means giving him my life. Following Jesus can be scary. The disciples followed him and he was killed and they thought they were next. But just as in the passage, the shepherd goes before the sheep, so Jesus goes before us. He shows us the way, and his way was a sacrificial way. Now, I don't know whether you do anything for Lent. I've never been one for Lent. I guess I was surrounded by people who did things for Lent, who I knew weren't really Christians, and it kind of sort of made me see it as a sort of religious thing that wasn't really about God. But anyway, this Lent, I decided I'd ask God. I said, do you want me to give up something for Lent? Because I just decided I'm not going to do that. Do you want me to give up something for Lent? And he said, giving something up for Lent for me was to make me think about Jesus and the sacrifice he made for me. So I decided that it wasn't about me giving something up, like chocolate or whatever else, but thinking about Jesus more, appreciating his sacrifice. So I started thinking about the sacrifices I make, and I decided when I think about them each day, I'll think about Jesus and his sacrifice. It's been amazing for me. It's really transformed a lot for me. I was driving one day and I thought about how I get up earlier than I would want to, and all the things I had to do for others and the stress that that caused me, and how I didn't get to do what I wanted to do. Last week I wanted to go to Military Wives. I didn't get to go because Mum was off, was sick. Yesterday we were going to go to lunch and I didn't get to go because Mum was sick. And I thought, okay, what about you? What sacrifice have you made, Jesus? And immediately it came to me that Jesus had to give up his life, that he enjoyed his life with the people he loved, and he sacrificed himself for me. And the cost of that for him was enormous. He was only 33. And he gave up his life with his mum and his brothers and his friends. And he did that for me. And as I'm driving in the car that day, I'm crying. And that's not like me. I don't connect a lot with the whole sacrifice on the cross thing. I'm sorry, that's a terrible thing to say from up here. But emotionally, it's not something that has really impacted me in that way. But that day I was crying in the car and I'm going to work. And you know, I thought God was far better pleased with me that day that I'd connected him with him that way than if I'd have given up chocolate. So, it's to do what he did, sacrifice ourselves for others, and give up what we want to do for the benefit of blessing others. So at the moment, when I struggle with that side of Christianity that's about serving others, giving up an hour on a Saturday morning to clean the church, giving up hearing the sermon down here because I'm upstairs with the children, I think about Jesus and what he gave up. He wanted to spend time with God or his friends. But there were these crowds waiting to see him. There were these people that had needs that he could meet. And he gave up what he wanted and he met with them. And it helps me. And the sacrifice I'm making doesn't seem such a struggle. But I recognise that this is what following Jesus is. That's great, because that's what I've chosen to do. I just haven't really seen it that way before. I just stayed in the feeling. So following Jesus, living in the kingdom, it gives you that identity, who you are, who he says you are. He spent time with those close to him. He told others about God. He healed the sick. He cared for people. He spent time with those no one else wanted to spend time with. He honoured those who others shunned. He changed their hearts with love. He stood up against those who distorted people's views of God. Jesus submitted to God and received from God, and he had to give up his own desires in order to do this. Do you want to do that too? So finally, I thought I'd share with you what the elders shared with one another as to their hopes and dreams for the future of our church. Particularly focusing on the next 18 months or so, it's going to take us that time to leave the SEC, put an advert out for a new minister, get a new minister. Well, probably looking about 18 months or so, aren't we? So, I'm going to show you. It wasn't pre-thought through. It's just what we came up with there and then on our day away. There's more on other sheets. This isn't the sum total. But I just thought I'd just share this one with you. And I thought I'd show you the photo of the page that we wrote on, because it makes it more real as to how our thoughts flowed as we talked. And there are just a couple of things I'm going to point out that answer that question: what does it look like for our church to be living in the kingdom and following Jesus? So the passage we read in John 10 verse 9 says, "To enter through me is to experience life, freedom and satisfaction. And I have come to give you everything in abundance, more than you expect, life in its fullness until you overflow." And then verse 16 says, "They'll follow me and listen to my voice, and I'll join them all into one flock with one shepherd." So we're going to compare that to our hopes and dreams. You can see having no fear, thriving, not limited by the experiences of others. That sounds like freedom and satisfaction to me. Then there's the Moors. You can see there, we have a dream of more growth in our relationship with God. More numbers. It's not all about numbers, but it'd be nice. More changing lives. A greater percentage going to house group and volunteering more. This is the abundance we seek. Oh, that we might overflow. Then there's following me and listening to my voice. We said the presence of God stirring us, a growth in relationship with God, walking in the cadence of God. I think that was a Charlesism. And finally, there is that phrase, "And I will join them all into one flock with one shepherd." Now, I know that was referring to the Jews and the Gentiles, but in our case, We can say we want unity. A unity where we defend one another. Where we're allowed to have different views, but where our vision is aligned week by week with one another and with God. So as leaders under the vestry, we're not operating in the way we did previously, but now under the vestry's calling and authority, we move forward, as did Moses and Joshua, to take hold of what God has for us. Our vision is to work together where all feel included. And how will we do that? But by our communication, our pastoral care, and all these other ideas that poured out of us for connectivity. Socials, going on a mission, having a church cookbook, evangelism, a church weekend away. But especially our small groups. That's the one place we share our different views, where we can feel included, where we defend one another by caring for one another, practically and in prayer, and where we can hold one another accountable. We, the elders, want to empower you, as the vestry has us, to impact the vision that God has for this community. We want you to believe in the gifting you have under the ministry of the church to rise up and take your place. So I think we covered it, don't you? Follow Jesus, live in the kingdom. I hope that sets your heart on fire. It did mine. This church, this is what I want to be a part of. I want more. I want to see us doing more. And I hope you do too. So as we go on to a response time, I want to say to you that if you feel God is stirring you to respond in a certain way, maybe you want to grow in a new way and haven't felt that you could or wanted to before. Maybe there's something that resonates with you in the Hopes and Dreams page, and God is prompting you and saying, that's for you. That's for you to get involved in. Maybe you're the one to make our dreams come true. Maybe if something that's holding you back from living in the kingdom and feeling included in this church, maybe there is genuinely something that you just think, I just feel I can't. I just, there's something. And maybe that something is the thing that you need to bring to God today. And if that's you, I'd encourage you to come forward. And Mark will talk us through how he wants to do that. Receive prayer. You know, prayer, bring it to God. He has the answer. So bring it to God in prayer. Or just come and speak to one of the elders after the service. Speak to us about anything. So, Mark.